This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Raise Your Game with me, Angeline Tay. Our lives are getting faster and faster. We are engulfed and constantly distracted by email, social media, and an always-on work culture. To put it simply, we're just too busy, too overloaded with information, and too focused on analytical left-brain thinking to be creative. And the worst part about this is the speed and noise of modern life is undermining the clarity and the quiet that we need to power individual thought. So here to tell us how we can step back from this overload, embrace some quiet, and maximize our creative potential is Chris Lewis. Chris is the founder and CEO of Lewis, one of the largest independent marketing and communications agencies in the world, and a media trainer who's coached senior politicians, business people, and celebrities as well. He joins us today to talk about his book, Too Fast to Think, and how it can help you reclaim your creativity in a hyper-connected work culture.
Hi, hello there, Angeline. How are you?
I'm good. I know it's a bit early over there. I think, what, 9 a.m. in London at the moment?
Oh, yes. Yes, the sun is shining and it's a wonderful morning.
Yeah. So maybe you can tell us a bit about yourself and how you came about writing this book.
Yes, of course. Well, I was a journalist by training and would spend a lot of time coming up with ideas, trying to come up with transcendent idea about a particular subject, which would define it and make it simple and easy to understand. And over the years, I've noticed that amongst the senior people that I've worked with, many of them report that their ideas come to them under quite unusual circumstances. We spend a lot of time at work these days, probably more time in the working mode. And yet when I asked people from such diverse backgrounds as the clergy, the military, from business background, from the arts, from science, they all reported a striking similarity in how their ideas come to them. And in short, that can be summarized by these three conditions. Firstly, they were seldom in the office. Secondly, they were seldom with anybody else. And thirdly, and perhaps most importantly, they reported that they weren't trying. The idea came to them when they were not trying. It just popped into their head from their subconsciousness. So the book is about where you are and what you're doing when you get hit by these brilliant ideas. And, of course, we have ideas at work, but sometimes, and these days, we have to really think, use our minds to come up with ideas which are really groundbreaking. After all, most of the modern corporations of the world are dominated by brilliant ideas. They've revolutionized what they've done by coming up with an idea which is simply better than anybody else and then executing it.
And you call this book essential reading for anyone who wants to maximize their creative potential. Why is this?
Yes, I wouldn't even qualify it as their creative potential. Anybody that's interested in reaching their potential, because the received wisdom about gaining potential is that we should educate people. And I don't disagree with that. But education to the graduate level, for instance, and beyond, only gives us a Western reductive approach to solving problems. It means we analyze them, which means we take the problem, then we break it down, and we break it down further, and we break it down even further until we understand what it means. And there is an equal and opposite process to that, which is that of being able to conceptualize and synthesize the problem into a wider perspective. So we have got a generation of business thinkers that analyze and drill down. And quite a lot of the situations that we're seeing around the world now are very surprising. And it's my suggestion that those are being caused by our inability to look across. We are so busy drilling down that we are unable to look across.
Yeah, we're seeing problems at a very micro scale instead of trying to look at it from a bigger picture's point of view.
Yes, and it's very important to join the dots on this because the graduate and university education is all about drilling down and becoming a specialist. And the world does need specialists, but we have a lot of experts, we have a lot of analysts, And a lot of the experts and the analysts have not seen some of the problems coming because they have not been able to join the dots around the world. And this is particularly important at the moment when the world appears, at least, to be much more volatile than it has been previously.
Mm. And now back to the book, you mentioned several challenges that comes with the way many of you work today, which is this, you know, quote, always on, unquote, work culture. Could you give us an overview of these challenges?
Sure. Well, I think we have to understand that there is a difference between being busy and being productive. Those two things are often confused. Mm-hmm. And there are we spend our business life being constantly interrupted. A lot of the technologies that we now have, especially the communications technologies, are disruptive. And perhaps many people who are listening to this might also understand that they may be looking at some of their emails coming in whilst they're listening to this this piece. And constantly, what that means is that whenever people are interrupted, they immediately pop back into their analytical mind, their left brain, so-called left brain. And yet, if we can carve out 45 minutes or so without being interrupted, we give our subconscious brains a little bit of a chance to get to grips with problems. And it's very important, this, because we have highly analytical minds, often very well educated, but we don't cultivate our subconscious minds. And this is the provenance of these epiphanies, where people report that when they're not trying and not concentrating, suddenly their subconscious bursts onto the scene with a great idea.
Mm. We'll actually find out more a bit about how you can actually cultivate your subconscious mind in a bit. But first, you know, talk more about information overload. What I understand is that technology and the information overload that many of us, if not, you know, most of us suffer today, has become counterproductive and limits to our creativity. But how bad is this overload? Because I know you link it back to left brain thinking, right? But how severe is this issue?
Well, if you take a standard business day of, say, eight hours, 480 minutes, and people are going to be getting, say, let's say a modest amount of email, which is, say, 100 a day, something like that. A lot of people get about 100 emails a day. And so they're being interrupted every 5 minutes. And that means that when you're asking knowledge workers in particular to get to grips with a problem, interrupting them every 5 minutes is a very stressful and very unproductive thing to do to them. And what's more is that when you interrupt them, they have less time to focus quality thinking on a particular subject. So, you know, one of the things you could ask your audience is, what do you like doing? What do you really like doing? And now imagine you had around about 10% of the time that you previously had to do that task. Would you still enjoy it? And again, it's my contention that it's very difficult for people to get good at tasks which they don't enjoy. And if they start to not enjoy being creative or problem solving, then they're going to become less effective as executives.
All right. So could you provide, you know, examples, stats or case studies to kind of indicate how this is affecting the way we work?
Yes. So one of the people that I interviewed for the book was a head of the Royal Navy, Admiral Sir George Zambellis. He's an engineer, a helicopter pilot, and he described situations in the Royal Navy as being quite interesting, because they spend a lot of time in the first half of their career in the Royal Navy following orders unquestioningly and doing what they're told. When they go up through the structure, they do almost the opposite. They have to be good at interpreting situations, seeing a wider situational fluency, understanding how things are related, and using their judgment rather than just following orders. And so this is the great paradox, which is that if we really want people to reach their potential and to access their own ability to become prosperous, we have to understand how the machinery works. We spend very little time doing this. Our education systems haven't really changed over the last 50 years. But if we are really interested in making the planet run more efficiently, we have to start with making human beings run more efficiently.
Mm. And you mentioned specifically in your book the disproportionate effect of this overload on millennials today and also on women. And tell us about this.
Yeah, so let's take another case study. At the University of St Andrews, where the Royal Princes studied, there's a chaplaincy there, which is run by a very wise man called Alistair Coles. And he, in the time that he's been there, he's seen the number of students with emotional and psychological problems increase dramatically from about 1 in 100 to about 30 in 100. And he ascribes this specifically to the development of the iPhone and to the overload environment. He describes many students as being excellent at communication, but terrible at conversation. And the implications of that are profound, that if you can't converse with someone, you find it difficult to negotiate, you find it difficult to resolve emotional relationships, and you also find it difficult to exchange ideas that are beyond your own parenthesis. And this was quite an insight in that Alistair Coles spends a lot of time in places where he's just trying to get people to talk to him and to solve their problems. And in many instances, they've never been quiet enough or in a quiet enough space with another interested person to do that.
Mm. When we come back, we talk about how wasting time can spark greater creativity. Chris Lewis, author of Too Fast to Think, will be right back on Race Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. You're still listening to Race Your Game with me, Angeline Tay. Chris Lewis, founder and CEO of one of the largest independent MarCom agencies in the world, Lewis, is with us today discussing his book, Too Fast to Think, which is about maximizing your creative potential. So, Chris, in your book, you say there are 8 crucial traits to creation and innovation. Could you walk us through these traits?
And these are these won't come as a surprise to many people who are watching and listening to this, because the first of the traits is for people to be quiet enough in order to be undistracted and to allow themselves to concentrate on something. If you're going to do that, you've got to engage with the process. You've got to be able to see it as a particular problem. You also have to recognize that it's okay to waste time, because people say when you're wasting time, you're not doing anything. Well, my contention is that when people are wasting time, they're actually doing an awful lot. They are actually rearranging their thoughts. They're preparing themselves for the future. They're allowing their body to cope with the stresses that they're under. And that means that it's also enabling them to relax.
So tell that to parents.
Parents can be very they sometimes lack understanding of the pressure that young people are under, because they haven't grown up in this overloaded environment of so many distractions and so much noise. Mm-hmm. And so when you look for these creative traits, in many instances, a lot of the access to the potential, if you could summarize it, would be to allow people clear space and time to be uninterrupted. And you don't have to do a great deal with people. You just need to give them that space, almost space enough to be bored, because when the brain gets bored, it starts using its imagination and coming up with better ideas.
That's when you get creative.
Okay. Exactly.
So you talked about quiet. You talk about recognize it's okay to waste time. What are the other traits?
So one of the things people are not encouraged to do is to teach. One of the traits is to teach other people what you know, because there is an old ancient Greek idea that the tutor is always the student, insofar as when you teach a subject, you actually allows you to organize your own thoughts about it. So often, if people really want to master a particular area, they should teach it. Another of the traits is to encourage people to play at what they're doing. The sophisticated term for that would be gamification. But there is a distinct connection between competence and preference. So all competence follows preference. People can only get good at what they like doing.
Yeah.
So if you're really interested in getting good at something, you have to choose to like it first, and then you'll get good at it. I don't know anybody I've ever met in 20 years who's become good at something they hate.
Well, actually, based on personal experience, like I've met, I think this is people in the professional career, like accountants or auditors. A couple of peers of mine don't really enjoy doing what they're doing, but somehow they're good at it, but they decide to stay with it because it's something that's more stable. Do you have something to say about that?
It would be a sad way to spend the whole of the potential in their life just doing something which was stable. Happiness in what you do and what you prefer to do is a choice. So there is not a task that you can't gamify, that you can't make enjoyable, because you know accountancy involves people, and people can be very delightful. And if an accountant also can reach their potential, it's not just about being left-brained. Everybody knows that in accountancy, one of the most interesting parts of it is how numbers are presented, and also what the interpretation of those numbers is. And so there is this idea that somehow accountancy cannot be as creative as advertising is a myth. When we talk about the creative industries, we're all in the creative industries now. We're all problem solving. And I don't mean just people doing creative communications. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people want to really solve the problems that are in front of them, and that's what professionals get paid to do, then tapping into their own ability to solve those problems more effectively is not only something which is enjoyable, but it's also something which is extremely lucrative and productive.
All right. So just a quick summary on the 8 traits are quiet, engage, yep. dream, yep. relax, release, repeat, play, and teach.
That's it. Yep. And they're all very straightforward. The book explains a lot of this, but it also points out that this is not just me that's saying this. These are leaders from a great diversity of organizations and backgrounds who are all saying these common things, which is that they've reached a point in life where they can only do so much. Leaders and people who are at the top of their professions have to be something. It's not enough just to do something. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to be successful in any form of collective endeavor, it means that they will be in a leadership position. Well, leaders have to be more than they do. They can rely upon people in the management and the structures beneath them to do things, but leaders have to be something.
Yeah.
Because if you look at, say, the orchestra conductor, very seldom can the orchestra conductor play an instrument better than anybody else in the ensemble. So you have to ask the question, why are they there? They're there because they can inspire and motivate people to perform better as a group than they can as individuals. And that's something you can't do inspiration. You can be inspirational, but you can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And also it's important to encourage young people today to be makers than just consumers as well.
Well, the very important thing about to millennials and to young people is that they have to have fun. It's really important. I would hate for them to think about having a career in business, which was something that they did just because it made them money and just because it was stable. They're supposed to be having fun, because when people are solving problems and using their potential, well, I haven't come across anybody that's been involved in accessing their potential that isn't having fun. Business should be the most fun you can have with your clothes on. Mm-hmm. It should be fun. And if you're not having fun, then you're probably not doing it right.
Yay. Anyway, coming back to wasting time as part of the trait, how does wasting time help us to be more creative? But what if I put it back to you, your company, which is Lewis? How does Lewis, the organization, infuse this into your work culture?
Well, first and foremost, you can set people objectives, but you mustn't tell them how to do those objectives. You must allow them to take their own interpretation of how something should be done. You've also got to make sure that they understand what things you take very seriously and what things you don't. And just about the only thing we, as an organization, we take seriously is somebody's sense of humor. And sense of humor is not measured in psychological tests, but it is something that you should take very seriously, because it indicates people's judgment, their timing, their intellect, their terms of reference, their ability to lead, how relaxed they are, how confident they are. We've all been in rooms where people have made a joke which is ill-timed and ill-judged. And people who can and do have a sense of humor tend to be better leaders. And so when we look at those qualities, we don't just assess people on the basis of their intellect. There's plenty of people out there who are very bright, but they also have to be human beings. They have to have hinterland. And we encourage people to broaden out their understanding of the world because their knowledge of the world and their ability to compete are directly linear.
Okay, and you also talk about office layouts and how this too can affect productivity and creativity at the workplace. So here at BFM, you know, we have a very open office layout, no cubicles, some standing stations to get the blood flowing, and very colorful subsections. I'm talking about yellow conference room and red pantry. Is this okay?
Yeah, it is. I mean, but why work in an office at all? I mean, if you have meetings, you can go outside and walk. only yesterday, I was with a senior colleague who'd flown in and on a long-distance flight, and the last thing we both wanted to do was sit in an office. So we both, for an hour, walked around the park, had a very productive discussion, and it was very enjoyable. We both really enjoyed it because we were getting some exercise and also talk. So it's not all about offices. But when you are in offices, you also have to recognize that they are social places. And yes, you do want places for them to be quiet in, but in many instances, they're social places. So they have to be set up for meetings. And the meetings are very important, particularly when you're trying to get the potential out of both genders. Well, I think most women would recognize sometimes that they've been in meetings where the loudest voice has dominated. And so, for instance, things like the silent brainstorm are quite important, where you would start off a meeting and for the first 15 minutes, nobody's allowed to say anything. They're just allowed to scratch, to write down their solution to a particular problem and then all take it in turns in presenting it. And that way it levels the playing field. It creates a gender equality and increases the level of engagement. After all, if you're seeking to communicate with an audience, you better be talking to both genders at the same time.
Okay. That's really interesting. Okay, what advice do you have for employees that work in a culture which is insistent on not just being always on, but also always available?
Well, there's no real problem with that, but I've seldom seen an organization which is always on, and Lewis is always on 24 hours a day around the world, where getting back to a client within an hour is unacceptable. You know, you can switch everything off for 45 minutes and focus your mind or even unfocus your mind, but you can be uninterrupted for an hour. It's okay to be checking your emails once an hour. You don't have to be checking them every 10 minutes. And so my advice is that, yeah, be always on, but recognize that in between that, you can find time to switch off. And just switching off for 45 minutes or getting out of the office for a walk, or even walking around your own office, will make you infinitely more productive than constantly going at it. The human brain is not an engine which can just be run in a linear sense all day long. It does need needs a break after 45 minutes. So a lot of this is people just assume that they're an infinite resource and they can carry on until suddenly they get very tired and burnt out, and then they're reaching for a piece of chocolate or to just keep them going, and just a bit of discipline which allows them to give themselves some uninterrupted space. Just give yourself a chance.
All right. And talk about sleep as well, right? I noticed that there's a whole chapter on sleep in your book. Why does sleep matter so much?
Well, this is particularly important because the endocrine system in the human body works sometimes when you're asleep. So, for instance, growth hormone in the body is only released between the hours of 1 and 2 in the morning where you are in your time zone. And so if you miss that, you miss a shot of the stuff that keeps you going, that keeps your skin looking good and keeps your brain fresh. And so sleep is particularly important because if people don't get enough sleep, they increasingly become more and more analytical and left-brained and unable to relax. And that stops them being creative. So I've not come across many people who can be long-term deeply creative on too little sleep. And the world is getting less sleep. If you can correlate this exactly with the amount of coffee consumption, which has almost doubled in the last 20 years.
And lastly, you ended your book with a whole chapter on how leaders apply creativity. You touched on it a little bit earlier. There were practical lessons, real-life lessons on how to put your creativity to best use. Maybe we can end our interview today with your favorite story from that final chapter on how leaders apply creativity.
I think the best phrase is just stop it. So somebody said, you know, the harder I try, the less the ideas come to me. There are many people who will be listening to this who play golf. And one of the best things you can say to a golfer is, why don't you grip the club only about 20% of the strength that you're currently using and just relax and just imagine in your mind making the shot. And then, you know, just make the shot like you're swinging a bucket of water and throwing it over your shoulder. And lo and behold, when they're not trying, they hit the ball 20% further than they would do if they were really trying. And my contention is that we've created a world where everybody tries really, really hard. And in actual fact, the gains in efficiency you get to solve problems when you're trying really, really hard are really marginal. And so we have to do something alternative, which is quite paradoxical, which is that if we really want to understand performance, we've got to step away from it rather than get closer to it.
I've been speaking with founder and CEO of Lewis, Chris Lewis, on his book, Too Fast to Think. If you missed part of this interview, you know what to do. Go download the podcast on the BFM mobile app for your listening pleasure anytime and anywhere. This is Angeline Tay. You've been listening to Race Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.